Are you ready? Welcome to Radio Grognard King Size, the OSR podcast with more stuff, with your host, Glenn Hallstrom.
Hi, folks. Old Man Grognard here. Hope you're all doing well. Well, I've got my first voicemail for the new show. So, and this is Jason. He just happens to be my GM for a Saturday game or games. And go ahead, Jason.
Glenn, it's Jason from New York calling to congratulate you on your revised King Size podcast. Quite enjoyed the first episode, and it was quite interesting, especially with some of the viewpoints on the creature features and modifications. Also was hoping you could have time in the near future to discuss some mechanics, like such as occurred in our previous game. Specifically, if you recall, the casting and capability of casting a sleep spell without the visual for the caster and the mechanisms involved there. Things of that nature, and your insights and wisdom is always well appreciated. Keep up the great work. Thanks.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it. Well, you know, I looked it up. I know we had trouble. Basically, a character was trying to cast a sleep spell through a closed door. I would ordinary, and it says area effect. In 1E, it says area effect special. So that's up to the interpretation of the GM. To tell you the truth, I do not think I would allow that. Now, I don't remember the circumstances, but the character to target somebody with a sleep spell or anybody with a sleep spell or group of people, you would have to know they're there. And so to me, that suggests line of sight. Now, if they scryed or something like that to know they were there, I don't know if I'd allow that, to tell you the truth. I think I was going to suggest, why don't you just bore a hole in the door somehow and look through there and cast it? But that probably would have alerted the target and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, I think I would adjudicate as, no, you need line of sight. Because you got to be able to see, you got to be able to be aware that a target is there to cast a sleep spell. I mean, yeah, you can do like, you know, you can do the I attack the darkness. Yeah, okay, fine. Go ahead and burn the spell. I don't care, but it's not going to work. Because there's no, you know, you don't know if there's anybody there or not. I mean, it's going to work, but it's just spell burned. Anyway, but that's pretty much my answer to that. Thank you, Jason. I really appreciate that. Anybody else want to give me a drop by Anchor and give me a little voice? That's fine, too. I'll always play those. Okay, I saw an older video by Professor Dungeon Master about No Initiative, and it intrigued me. I was watching it, and I thought it was a really good idea, and it reminded me of something. It reminded me of Tunnels and Trolls, because they sort of do a version of this in combat, because each side is supposed to roll all their pluses and everything like that, and, you know, whoever has the highest number wins, and the difference between the two numbers is the damage. Now, that wasn't exactly what Professor Dungeon Master was doing, but it was close enough that it just sort of suggested it to me. So I wouldn't mind trying the no initiative thing. The thing that TNT has is the difference is the damage that the losing side takes. But you have a choice of being able to divide that damage up between characters who can take it better. Some have better defense than others, and the fighter can go, okay, I'll take the brunt of it because I've got armor and all this defense and all this, and the magic user will only take either a fraction or none or something like that, so you can actually distribute the damage. I would do that. I think I would add that to the no initiative thing the way he did it. I know it's not really... Because in TNT, it's like everybody takes everything. I didn't find out till later that you should divide it up into like, this group is fighting over here, this group is fighting over here. Basically dividing up your big battles into little, you know, groups like that. And, you know, they're still going to take, you know, they're going to divide the damage between whoever's engaged. So that kind of thing I would probably try out anyway. But it's a good idea. I like it. But it's just, you know, it needs a little work. That's all. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, what else we got? Okay. How about characters BSing their way through encounters? I kind of like that. The social encounters. We just had one in my Monday game about our group basically bluffing our way into a costume part, a mask ball that one of the Sharn embassy was having in order to get a hold of this one lady, the ambassador, so we can investigate whatever we were supposed to investigate. And it took a lot of rolls. I mean, a whole lot, not a whole lot of rolls, but it took a few, because we've got like six people in our group, six characters, and some were better than others. Unfortunately, I took lead on that because I was the guy, I was the head of the party, and you know, I just felt like I should start, and I tried to pass myself off as the Moonwatch ambassador pro tem, and I named everybody else I gave a title to. So, you know, I knew that the other characters, the thievy type characters, were better at this thing than I was. So I just barely got by, and then I let one of the guys who I said was my major domo. I said, you know, talk to him. Okay, fine. And he had a better role. So this is the kind of thing I like to do when you're trying to bluff your way into something, is the fact that do the role play, then roll. Okay, I know you guys got a higher role, but it ain't going to matter at all if you can't come up with a good cover story and you can't come up with a good reason why you should be there, or why you should let you do these things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, do the role play, then the roll. That's my motto right there. Role play, then roll. If you even need to roll, because the GM can decide you don't have to roll because your line of bull was so good that it worked. There's nothing wrong with that. You do not have to roll on that, but it's a nice thing to have. So, you know, that's the kind of thing you got to worry about, or rather the players have to worry about. So I would suggest, you know, it's going to be a case of role play it, then we'll roll. Okay. If you want to decide the person who has the highest, you know, even the person who has the highest, whatever, you know, whatever stat, whatever skill, they still got to role play. They still got, because I want to see them use their stuff. I want to see them use their skills. And if it's SP, a player skill, you know, the players basically have to do it. So, yeah, role play, then roll. That's my rule. And I'm going to stick by that. How about that? And I ain't got nothing to say about that now. Okay, what else? What else we got here? How about we go over to, let's see, yeah, let's talk about world setting sections. And what I mean by that is, you got a campaign world, okay? You got a campaign world, and you're trying to figure out where the PCs fit into it, and, you know, how you want to work this stuff. Well, as a fan of you know, hex crawls and point crawls, I would divide it up that way. Say you have 3 points in one section and 2 points in another, and I would have section 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D, that kind of thing. And just take your map. Take a copy of your map. Take a copy of your map and just divide it like you're cutting it up. And it's a lot easier to deal with. A lot easier. Because you can only, if you want to, because it's easier just to focus on one section of the world at a time. You know, they're going to be moving around in the adventure in this area, and it's got like 2 points or 2-3 hexes that, you know, just fine. That's one section, and they go into another section, you look at that section. You know what I'm saying? Just divide it up into sections like that. And it'd be better. It really would. Now, in relation to that, we will talk about city sections. And I talked about world sections, I talked about city sections. Okay, you've got a major city, and they're traveling around in it. And it's pretty much an ad hoc thing. Where can I find a tavern? Where can I find a magic shop? Things like that. So divide that into, of course you're going to divide the city into sections anyway. But what I'm saying is, divide it into sections. Here's where the five-room dungeon comes in handy. Because you can make sections of the city five-room dungeons. You don't have to do an adventure or anything, but say, okay, there's a magic shop over here. That's the entrance with the guard. You have to get through the guard to get into the shop because they only let wizards in, and you are a thief, and so you're going to have to figure out a way to get in. That kind of thing. That's the challenge, etc., etc. And just put five-room dungeons around the sections of your cities and work it that way. You don't always have to have an adventure, like I said. You just have places. And you got to make it an adventure. That'd be fun. You know, same thing. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, that's just something to think about. You know, dividing your city up into sections too. Okay, rules I do and do not use. And the one I do use is plus dice. And what I mean by that is I'm still an old grognard. So I'm going to use pluses on whatever, you know, roll you do. Okay, you do that at a +2, do that at a +1. I mean, the concept of advantages and disadvantages is nice. But it's not enough for me. You know, I gotta have that granularity when it comes to something like that, if you know what I mean. So I gotta have the pluses. And that's just the way I roll, the pluses and minuses. I mean, like I said, I have to have that granularity. Now, one thing I don't use is psionics. I still don't like psionics. I don't think psionics has ever been done right. I haven't really looked into the 5th edition psionics, but I'm kind of afraid to. But it's just, you know, psionic discipline, psionic points, it just becomes a pain in the butt. It's just easier to deal with spells. And to me, psionics, it just don't get it for me. It doesn't work with me in a fantasy setting. Because you've got magic, you've got holy spells. Why do you need that? I don't know. Anyway, that's my opinion. I'm sticking to it. So how you people been doing? I've been doing all right so far. Now, here's something else. This falls under the category, this old dungeon. World building, because this is going to be dungeon world building. World building. Now, when I started... And when I used to be on Save or Die, when I started there, we had a subject of how do you build your worlds? Do you build from the ground up, or do you build out or in? Basically, do you start with the world, then drill down into like a city or area or something like that? Or do you start with like a city and a couple other places and then build the world out from there? And we had one person say, I do it this, build the world out. I do it the other way. And they asked me, and I said, how do you do it? He says, I do it sideways. I said, what do you mean sideways? I said, simple. I take a map. I just throw some cities down and point to one, and that's where they start. I may have a forest over here, a dungeon over here. Maybe. And to me, that's doing it sideways. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's all, almost about, it's almost like building out, but you got a few more places to play around with. The thing I just talked about, city sections, or the adventure sections, that's even better for it. That's a great way to start sideways. And I'd suggest doing that if you want to try it. Anyway, that's my suggestion. That's pretty much my suggestion right there. Okay, I wanted to talk about Savage Worlds because I really like Savage Worlds. They got some great campaign worlds, not that you can't make your own, but it's just, it's a fast system and I like it. Now, I wanted to say, I wanted to compare it to Index Card RPG, which is my new love, but I don't think I'm going to do a comparison because to me, they're kind of apples and oranges, because you can go pretty fast in Index Card RPG, but it doesn't feel like really furious like Savage Worlds. It's more of a let's play D&D only with Index Card RPG thing. And now you've got fantasy stuff for Savage Worlds like Savage Pathfinder and things like that. So, you know, you can pick one or the other, use both, or, you know, I like to use Savage Worlds for stuff other than fantasy. I mean, you can use Index Card for that, too, and I want to try it. I want to try running something that isn't fantasy or sci-fi. But the easiest thing for me is go to Savage Worlds, because I like my pulp. And I know, I can do it with Savage Worlds, but, I mean, on Index Card, but there's so many, there's some really good pulp stuff out there for Savage Worlds. And I would suggest, because that's basically what it's built on. I know it was built on Deadlands, but it was also built for pulp. Really was. I mean, you can do supers, you can do pulp, you can do sci-fi, you can do this, that, and the other. They're both universal systems. It's just one has, it all comes down to tone and flavor. Most games do. They come down to tone and flavor. And if you can get a game system that is easy to run, fast to run, and really reflects the tone, it works. That's why there's so many game systems out there that is either based on a clone or something, or like BX or something like that, or they have their own system suited to that system. Hyperborea comes to mind. But, you know, that it depends on how it feels. And to me, I tend to go with my gut. I go with my what feels right. And those two feel righter, but Savage World, and also it's a group it's something my Monday group is familiar with too. So that has something to do with familiarity with the players. Do you want to get them up and running on there, or do they know the system? You know, how do you want to do this? But that's something to think about. So Savage Worlds may be Index Card RPG. I'm inclined to do a straight up fantasy for Index Card right now and then branch out. I'd really like to try doing like a post-apocalyptic, but then you're dealing with stuff like mutations and stuff, but it's really easy to do with that system. But then it's easy to do with, see, Savage Worlds, you got to work a little more because they got powers and stuff. But Index Card, you like fly by the seat of your pants. And it's fun. So we will see how that shakes out. All right. My final subject in this wonderful little podcast, I'm going to talk about old gamers, of which I am one. Now, you know what's funny? When I got back into this, after a few years away, I never felt my age until I started playing again, the OSR stuff. Because all of a sudden, I was the old man at the table, which doesn't really bother me. That means I had the most experience doing this most of the time. But you know, some people just, you know, they don't want to deal with old gamers or old games. And let me put it this way. They'll deal with old gamers if they play the current edition. Okay? So, I don't. I mean, I do, but I don't. I play in a 5e game. I don't run a 5e game. I think that's a great, great difference, whether you're running or playing or both. Because GMing a game gives you a certain perspective that you don't get when you're sitting there with one character and some dice and playing. So there's that. Because, you know, old gamers are out there and they're going to, and 9 times out of 10, they're going to play the old games. And there is nothing wrong with that. Now, this is kind of a rant, but, you know, I just wanted to put that out there. I mean, there are some people like Aaron the Pedantic. They love old games. They love, I mean, yeah, they play DCC, but they can, DCC, they consider DCC a clone. I don't get that. To me, it's not a clone. But he'll play the old games. That's no problem. I'm bumped into young people who do that. My friend Crispy does that. He's playing Labyrinth Lord and Swords and Wizardry and stuff like that. You know, those old clones. So there's nothing wrong with that, but there are some people. It's like I'm a film buff, as you know. It's like people who won't watch any movie that's in black and white. What's wrong with black and white? Well, that's old. What's wrong with old? You know, why don't you, you know, spread your wings, broaden your horizons, things like that. But yeah, but some people are like, oh, you're playing that game. Well, excuse the hell out of me. I happen to like BX or something like that. And it's funny, you can get the younger players over to play something like Old School Essentials because that's the big, that's the hot thing. So I guess that's a way to win over the young crowd. Anyway, I got to go start my day. So if you guys want to talk to me about these or anything else, oldmangrognar@gmail.com or drop me a voicemail in Anchor. We are monetized. So as little as 99 cents a month, you too can help support this program. And I would thank you. For single donations, go to my Ko-fi page, ko-fi.com/oldmangrognard, or my PayPal tip jar, paypal.me/oldmangrognard. Let me thank these people who do give to me monthly. Gilbert Soares, Juan Carlos Llewellyn, Benjamin Brodell, John Allen Large, and Aaron. Thank you very much, guys. For other good podcasts, there's Dan Gregg's The Young, Y-U-N-G, Young Grognard Podcast, Kevin at the Red Caps Podcast, Daniel Norton's Bandits Keep Podcast, Randy and Joe's Biggest Geekest Podcast, Big John Allen Large's The Red Dice Diaries, and my friend Eric Tinkar's Tavern Chat. So, until I see you folks next time, keep the dice warm, and I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye. You got questions? You got comments? Send them to oldmangrognard@gmail.com. Tune in next time when Radio Grognard King Size is on the air.